Today is October 4th, and we're having Andre with us to talk about the conflicts and in the world. In each and every part of the world, we have a new conflict. And Andre, let's start with the conflict in the Middle East, these interactions between Iran and Israel. Iranian attack with missiles on Israel. How did you find it in terms of the way that Iran wanted to send a message to Israel?
Oh, he sure, Iran sure sent the message, no doubt about it. I mean, it was complete breakthrough, I mean, in the sense of the wanted, grossly overstated Israeli air defense, which is not really Israeli, primarily all of it is American, you know. And yeah, we saw everything we needed to see. Just Nevatim alone, an air base, it's a military base, which is very large, sustained 32 direct hits, okay? That's everything you need to know about this air defense. And yeah, I wrote 4 books on that. So essentially, so, you know, what can I say? Israel is in shock, and are really, because they understand now. I don't know who sold them there this basically BS about them being some kind of the, you know, premier military force. It is a regional force which certainly can defeat some kind of the, you know, backward, not very well trained third world army. And even that will, we know what is happening in Gaza. It still continues, you know, it never stopped. And they still cannot do much about it other than commit genocide, essentially. So in this respect, yeah, it was shown basically what, considering the fact that this, most of it is actually Boeing and Raytheon products, what they are worth. Not much against serious enemies. So there you go. And it was paraded all over the world.
Isn't it surprising for you that they're trying to have all of these conflicts at the same time, fighting Palestinians, fighting Hezbollah, fighting Iran, fighting even in with Syria, which is part of they try to bomb the, they try to attack the Russian base in Syria?
They didn't try to attack Russian base, because let's immediately, you know, nip it into the bud, in the bud, so to speak. No, it's primarily rumors promoted and stuffed into the media sphere by primarily Ukrainian, and it's the US and British curators, against the background of the catastrophic defeats which armed forces of Ukraine and their operational planners from NATO, they are controlling tactical and operational planning, which basically parades them as the military incompetent, which, you know, I've been for years on the record. They are military incompetent people, despite their big stars. And they needed to kind of move away their attention from this catastrophe. Ugledar has fallen. Russians already took another bunch of the villages today. It is a catastrophe. So, it, as I already stated, the front is in the state of collapse. And obviously, it's going to be accelerating even more. This is how collapses are happening. So they needed to, you know, take, reorient, so to speak, attention and focus. So here they are. Why don't we invent the rumor that they attacked the Russian base? Israel was attacking Syria's and Hezbollah's assets in Syria for many years. The only way Russian Khmeimim air base or Russian Tartus base could be attacked is primarily by all those ISIS-type groups, you know, which are trained and supplied with Israel and, you know, United States and Britain, but they will not go to commit suicide, you know, and directly attack Russian base. Because as I already spoke today with Anya and Larry on the podcast, bases are essentially, from the judicial point of view, are extension of the Russian national territory. So if Israel decides to attack, you know, base at Tartus or Khmeimim, they are attacking Russia. They are not complete idiots there. They know that after that, well, Israel can cease to exist, you know, if it comes to this. It's just a matter of escalation and how it is going to be happening. So this is not true. But obviously, they have been attacking all kinds of things around it. So it's not the first time. And we people forget about, for example, a tragedy with Russian IL-20 electronic warfare, aircraft. I believe it was, 6 years ago, 2018, I believe, when, Syrian air defense, by mistake, trying to track and target the Israeli Air Force aircraft, they hid behind IL-20, and as a result, Syrians shot down IL-20 with the Russian crews, and, So that's how it was going there for a long time, so there's nothing really special about it.
What do we know about the air defense system from in the aftermath of this attack? What do we know about the air defense system of Israel? They have Patriot system, they have Iron Dome, and are they similar? They're different in the way that they're working?
Iron Dome is a system designed to repel, and it does it somewhat, still missing a lot of things. It's primarily for the slow targets up to Mach 2. It's supersonic, but it's really easy targets when all those Qassam, whatever the name of those missiles, which are essentially made out of pipes, by the, Hamas and Hezbollah, so they were shooting those missiles, at Israeli territory. That's what it was designed for. It is absolutely incapable to intercept modern, let alone maneuvering, hypersonic, well, most of the long range or intermediate range ballistic missiles, they're hypersonic on the burnout anyway, so it's just not that type of hypersonic. People are very confused, which is, by the way, we have to thank the Western media, which are populated basically infested with the technologically incompetent people. But yeah, it's still high speed, very high speed. It's above Mach 5. And yeah, as we saw it, as with Patriot, and all those arrow, which is heads, not good. I mean, they are really not good, period. It's United States is generation behind, for example, Russia in terms of air defenses, let alone in terms of the anti-ballistic missile defenses, which are strategic missile and obviously intermediate range, such as, for example, what Iran was using or used against Israel. And there you go. It's a complete failure. It's a complete failure. They are now basically going out and lying to the face of the people already. American specialists already counted 32 hits on Nevatim alone. 32. Now they begin to invent that, several hundred missiles. Iran stated that it was 108 from what I, not even 180. I think so, it was 108. However, don't quote me on that. There's so much garbage, circulating right now on the internet. But reality is that basically what Iran did is suppress the Israeli air defense. They lost not just, they missed not only hits, for example, as I already stated, the huge number of hits on Nevatim, but evidently number of the air defense complexes have been taken out, including all those wanted, heads, which is arrow, David Sling, things like that. And the point is that they performed dismally. But then again, Mr. Semyonov, first deputy commander of the Russian air defense and air space forces, he's on record. I use it all the time. He went on record 3 months ago. He stated Patriot cannot defend itself, let alone defend anything around it. So this is the type of the very expensive, highly ineffective, and very backward air defense systems. And there you go. Israel was exposed completely.
With this attack on Hezbollah on the ground, I talked with Larry. He believes that most of these troops are poorly trained to this type of battlefield, to this type of fight. And do you think that this could be a recipe for slaughtering their troops the way that they're getting in Because Hezbollah, we know that they know how to fight on the ground. They don't have any sort of air defense system. They don't have fighter jets, but they know how to fight on the ground.
Well, Hezbollah knows how to fight over not only over the ground, on the ground. There are a number of videos right now circulating, and they are not CGI neural network. These are real deal. I saw one video. You have literally Israeli special forces moving in the column in the open road, entering Lebanon. Guess what? The guy from Hezbollah pops up with his, stationary TOW, knockoff by Iran, TOW, anti-tank missile, and he launches it. Guess what? Very few people survived from this column. There was like a couple of squads, half of platoon, essentially. Guess what? Most of them are dead. IDF is, as General Pulikovsky stated a couple of months ago, and again, it's on my blog and videos. He said the whole bubble of mythology, or as he said, soap bubble of Israeli military mythologies have been burst. They are indeed poorly trained force, evidently with the low combat stability. I don't think so. They will have a good time with Hezbollah. Hezbollah is not Hamas. Unlike Hamas, however, Hezbollah has a very serious, actually, basically number of the serious weapon systems.
So. Yeah. Andre, Ben Wallace is suggesting NATO and Ukrainians use the same method as Netanyahu is using in the Middle East to win the conflict in Ukraine. When he suggests this type of concept, Andre, what is he talking about in your opinion? He's talking about just killing the head of just military in Russia, just doing the way that, because Netanyahu is just killing just civilians and just killing the leader of Hezbollah, Hamas, and the only thing that we've seen so far is this. And what is he suggesting in your opinion?
Well, he is a British military hack and sore loser, because Britain military is a chihuahua, basically. It's a laughable, clownish army. And so Ben Wallace won't pass the entrance exam into any Russian military academy. So he is hurting. This is a typical British, basically sanctimonious way of expressing how they are hurting, feeling themselves being... Well, that's complex of inferiority. So what can he offer? Of course, what they are good at only. Killing civilians and, those people are not normal. And again, look at the graduates of the Sandhurst. 44 weeks to prepare cadre officer. Are you joking? I mean, this is like, it's clownish force. They are really good only as I already stated, and this is well documented. This will be also a serious case against the NATO participants, including their ignorant and illiterate officers who basically create primarily operational and strategic catastrophes. So Ben Wallace is pretending that UK somehow matters. They don't. They're nobodies. And so what you say, you have to go out and startle people with all kinds of the ridiculous statements, And don't forget, most of the British military power in the second half of the 20th century was primarily done through propaganda. They were still thinking themselves big and important. They have this 50,000 strong, British army of the Rhine, which was the part of the NATO force, which was supposed to face Soviet army, during the Cold War, if it goes hot. So they are ignorant, very professionally incompetent people in British military. And that's what they do. So what? Yeah, kill civilians. I today, in my video today, it's already up. There are new evidence of how cruel those volunteers, quote unquote, are. Most of them are cadre soldiers and officers. They rape women. They pretty much, that's what they do. In terms of a real fight, not good.
Andrei, what's going on? You've mentioned Ogledar, and right now we know that it is the city is in the hand of Russians. And what would be the next step for Russians?
You know what? If you look today, just again, and I follow, for example, one of my friends, Marat Khairulin, who is obviously on the front lines constantly. There are other people, former friends, who are on the front lines. But the point is, you look at the Svatova direction, at Toretsk. Toretsk is basically, you know, the huge parts of Toretsk are controlled by Russians now. But today, the new statistics by Russian Defense Ministry about the situation in Kursk, and that is why, for example, they are not good fighters. I mean, Anglo-Saxons do not know how to do their combined arms operations. But the same goes for Europeans, especially Poles and Georgians. They committed horrendous crimes against humanity, as I already stated. Rape woman, cut her head off, you know, so things of this nature. And that's very well explained, and why Ben Wallace, who won't be able to communicate with the lieutenant fresh from the military academy in Russia, because he will just overwhelm him with their knowledge, is because today data is they lost more than 20,000 troops in Kursk alone and hundreds of everything. So basically, these are NATO planners. They lost two divisions now, you know. So, well, two divisions is essentially the core. So that's the quality of these people. And do not forget, they still think that Slavs are generally are subhumans. This is very popular among the London elite. So in Washington. So for them, I mean, yeah, we killed, you know, 20 plus, well, probably already by now 21,000 Ukrainians there. Hey, who cares, you know? But obviously, as we already see across the board, the West is paraded as the paper tiger. So, and they are really good at, again, robbing, you know, raping, stealing, things of this nature. And fighting real war, no, they're not good. And as a result, we see this situation across the front. And whatever the general staff decides, because as I already stated, Russia faces this almost metaphysical dilemma, if you wish, you know. Can Russia take Kyiv if it needs to? Yeah. I mean, why would Russia go and waste, you know, lives of their soldiers when this thing can fall on its own? But the problem is, what are you going to do with the things which are to the west of Kyiv, which is filled basically with the people who hate Russian gods, those Ukrainians? They are brainwashed and so. Do you want those people being part of your society? No, of course not. What do you do? Cordon sanitaire? Maybe. But the point is that Russia is not going to be consulting West. And now suddenly you have, as the result, Kurt Campbell, Deputy Secretary of State of, you know, United States, saying that to in Carnegie Endowment that, oh, yeah, you know, we need to sit and start negotiating. Well, they should have done this in 2022. Today, it's not going to be negotiations between the United States and Russia. They will be dictating of the terms of surrender. That's the only thing, because you cannot change military reality on the ground. But people like Ben Wallace, they think that the more they, you know, spew BS, to say it together with Mark Milley or Ben Hodges or the other, you know, top brass of U.S. Army, which paraded itself, as I already stated, a bunch of incompetence. I do not count Europeans. Those are clowns, basically, you know. So, and what are you going to negotiate with people who won the war? It's just a matter of how Russia approaches the fate of the whatever will be left of Ukraine. Either it will be completely dissipated as the state, and it is actually, it is a virtual state. It exists primarily on the, basically, donations of the combined West. So in this case, it's not military issue. It's the issue of the, you know, how you politically rearrange this. And guess what? The fact that even Europeans are not very bright people. I'm not talking about the whole population, but their elites are stupid. But guess what? Suddenly, Russia is issued invitation, no less, in December for the Organization of Security and Cooperation in Europe to be present there in Valletta, in the, you know, capital of Malta. It's like, why? No, Russians said, yeah, sure, we will come. Guess what? They will come to dictate the conditions to what Europe has become and how it's supposed to behave itself, which is, of course, surrender. But still, the fact that they suddenly issued this, I don't know. It tells you something, doesn't it?
We've learned that Ukrainians are sending their best tanks to the Kursk region. And the question is, what's in it for them right now? And the way they're sacrificing their soldiers, it's turning to a new Avdiivka for them. And because the Kursk region is a very small region that nobody knows, Andrei, what's in it for them? Why they're sacrificing too many soldiers and weapons in order to keep this region?
The region is something about by 7 to 8 kilometers wide and about between 5 to 7 kilometers in depth. That's the real kind of spot which is happening there. The rest of it, they're dispersed in the, you know, all kinds of the small forests there. And why are they sending it? They sending it for a simple reason, because NATO told them, as already stated, Mr. Bortnikov, chief director of FSB, today on record, he says, NATO officers plan everything on the from the tactical to operational level across the whole length of the front. The fact that those officers are not good, we knew this all along. I mean, because actually, as I already stated, their military education and, you know, in combined Western, especially in the United States, is a joke. And primarily, they live in this fantasy how they won the war against Nazi Germany with, you know, small, you know, help from those Russians. Obviously, when you have your sand castles standing there and they think that it's serious, what do you learn? You're going to learn nothing. You're going to actually prime yourself for being defeated militarily. They are not the same level of Russian operational and strategic level staff people. They are simply not. They're not good. And so right now, for many of them, it is apart from the Ukrainian part, which has the vested interest in providing some kind of the PR to convince, you know, Washington that they still can do something. But there are many people on the American side, and let alone British military is a joke. And so they are there to trying to prove to themselves, because since this famed counteroffensive last year, which was completely decimated. It was 180,000 people died in that. So you have now those morons are now planning for more people to die there because they need to prove themselves. They cannot prove themselves. They are not educated well. They don't have proper military background. They don't understand combined arms. They never encountered a serious enemy like Russia. And when they face the people who fight much better, and again, Pentagon and their commands and their planning organizations, they are simply not the same league, period. They will be awestruck if they will be brought into the, you know, the structures of the Russian general staff and chief operational directorate. And so these people continue to throw that, you know, those, cannon fodder, because what we have now, the same with Israeli defense, they have been paraded as the paper tiger. United States not only doesn't have resources to fight such power as Russia, it doesn't have experience, it doesn't have education, it doesn't have actually any reference point which will allow them to compete. And they, and you look at the operational tactical documents which are written there. They are written for fighting. You know what? All those, you know, third-rate militaries. That's probably gonna work. Not well. We know how it all ended in Afghanistan. We know Iraq. We know Vietnam. We know all of it. And yet, here are the people who think that, well, they got educated on the Hollywood. So what do you expect? You have, when you look at Mr. Ben Hodges, I don't know, maybe he's on some really strong drugs, but the guy is delusional, and most of them are.
Andrei, the Zelensky administration right now, we've learned that Umerov, if I'm pronouncing his name, and together with the Budanov, the head of intelligence, and even Seversky has a lot of disagreements with Zelensky. They're thinking of getting out of, not Seversky, these two are thinking of getting out of the administration. And what is the situation of the Zelensky administration? Because at the end of the day, they have to keep this administration functioning for the West.
Yeah, the Washington wants to do that. Well, again, they want to fly to Mars, but they will not. So it's like the famous anecdote, you know, about the whorehouse, which started, you know, losing money. So they don't know what to do with losing the money. So they, you know, they did the facade, did the cosmetic, you know, upgrading of the whorehouse. Loss of money continues. So guess what? Then they changed the whole, you know, furniture inside the whorehouse. Still continue to lose money. So they invite, you know, public accountant to help them, you know, to figure out why the whorehouse continuously lose money. So after half a day doing the, you know, books, this accountant said, okay, I saw, you know, guys, you did the facade, you know, you changed the furniture to the good. Have you tried to change horse? So, and this is exactly what Washington does. They are trying to treat the four-stage cancer with the Band-Aid. It doesn't matter how you change the furniture or how you fix this crumbling facade. In the end, it's not survivable. Because there are military, political, and strategic and operational realities you cannot deny. No, you can't deny them. But reality as a gravity is a, pardon my French, is a bitch, you know? It's going to bite you, and it's going to bite you so bad. You know what? You will snap eventually into, you know, a reality, facing the reality. And this is exactly where we're at right now. And then, yeah, Kurt Campbell said, oh, yeah, we might do the, you know, discussion. Yeah, Russia going to be talking only to Washington. And something tells me that there have been already all kinds of the attempts at the contacts. But again, in order for you to negotiate something, you have to have at least something which you can provide back. United States has nothing to offer to Russia. Across the board, Russia simply is independent of the United States in every single aspect of its activity. So as the result, especially with what they can see, some people in Pentagon are not completely stupid. They see what is happening on the front. They can calculate and they say, yeah, we're screwed. And suddenly you have to go and negotiate, but you can't negotiate because you will be dictated the conditions on which you have to surrender. You see, it could be unconditional surrender, but Russians are kind people. You know, they might go and provide some conditional surrender, you know, like you do this, you do that. And as I already stated, the invitation or even the rumor, listen, the foreign minister of Malta, with Malta is a lovely island and all that, you know, and it's definitely the cradle, one of the cradles of the Western civilization. Well, the problem is, a foreign minister of Malta, considering the size and scale of Malta, wouldn't invite Lavrov to OSCE. That means what? That means it was sanctioned by higher ups, the powers that be. For Europeans, it is too late. They are done. So, it is United States probably trying to restore some kind of things. And Kurt Campbell says that much. The problem is, I already stated, they missed the opportunity actually twice. Now it's too late. And what can I say? Again, you cannot fight reality. You can't. You know, it's objective reality. It exists beyond our desires, you know, or our imagination. You only fight the war, you win it, you get the, you know, basically the prize.
Andre, I don't know if you watched the, you know, you heard the talk, these two Russian pranksters talking with Mike Pompeo. And in your opinion, the way that he was talking about the conflict in Ukraine is close to what Donald Trump is thinking of right now, or he's the way the people around him are thinking of the conflict.
You're talking about Mike Pompeo, right?
Mike Pompeo.
Yeah. Vavan and Lexus, they are actually have been awarded orders because essentially they are one of the best Intel assets in the world. And they are in the open, man. So they do things which some intelligence officers like, oh my God, we wish we could do that. Hey, just call them. They might help you. So the point is, listen, there are some people who understand what is going on. At least they understand that United States lost. What they do, as I already stated, it's like Ben Wallace, they are hurting. They are experiencing this cognitive dissonance. They're experiencing the horrendous complex of inferiority because they, you know, talk themselves up to the egos larger than cathedrals, you know. And then suddenly they recognize, well, you're not that important, you know, and militarily you are second rate, essentially. You cannot fight combined arms in Europe. You will be defeated with horrendous results. And now they have to deal somehow with this. It's probably Kubler-Ross model in action, you know, what the bargaining, then, you know, acceptance. They will have to, they are close to the acceptance phase. Russians are not in rush. Russia has all, for, you know, all resources to do it for years, you know, combined West doesn't. And so they need to find some way of dealing with this. Trump administration, which I think so might happen, it depends also a lot who will be around him in terms of his national security advisor, for example. Okay, if he wins the election, who will be his Secretary of the State and things of that nature. It all depends what kind of the team comes in. He surrounded himself last time with all neocons and all crazies and nut jobs, you know, and all those fundamentalists and, you know, this death cult of the fundamentalist evangelicals and, you know, the Christian Zionists. But today, well, J.D. Vance, actually, some people went panicky when he said Israel can do whatever it deems, you know, necessary, you know, in terms of Iran. Well, I mean, it's a pretty much general, you know, statement, which is platitude, essentially. So what else could he do? But the point is that J.D. Vance obviously understands that this cannot continue. And it doesn't matter what they say. It doesn't matter what they want. The conditions are such that they have to disengage from this suicidal policy. Because, well, let's face it, American politics has been Ukrainized. It actually reaches the level of corruption, which is very similar to what it is in Ukraine right now. But the United States has no resources. You know, if United States wants to commit suicide through Ukraine, it's certainly welcome. Other than that, there's simply no ability to continue on this course. United States has zero resources, militarily, economically, politically, and morally. And as a result, probably Russians wouldn't mind to go at it for another year or so to completely embarrass the what's left of the combined West and completely destroy whatever remaining grounds, moral grounds they have. I don't think so they have any. And so, yeah, and what we're basically observing right now on a strategic level, it's a catastrophic defeat of the combined West. And Global South, or so-called Global South, sees it. And now, again, as I said, there are some things which many people, you know, kind of go over them and don't even notice. You know that Azerbaijan is being the member of BRICS. The huge Kazan, this October 30th, summit of BRICS. That will be the final nail in the coffin of the US dollar. So, and Turkey will be accepted to BRICS. This is, I mean, these are changes of the such a historic scale that even collapse of the Soviet Union is kind of like, yeah, it was big. But my God, this is like strategic defeat of the West.
Andrei, here is what Pompeo said in terms of how to separate Russia from China.
You can't let them believe that they get to. This is really a China issue, for me. This is. We need to pull the Russians back into a European model, not an Asian model. Mm.
But for you, does it mean that Russia is going far away from west if they're trying to go to China's.
We need to prevent it from happening.
Really? So how we can manage it?
If this war stopped, you and then you begin to bring Russia back in and convince them that they're in a better place with us than them. There's nothing fancy about it.
Andrei.
And this was the guy for the CIA director, okay? The graduate of the West Point Academy. What can I say? Delusional. I mean, delusional guy. I mean, they're delusional. And as I already stated, take any U.S. general and put him in the room with basically a platoon or let alone company commander, who is probably, you know, the full lieutenant or maybe a captain. And they will wipe the floor with them. They are delusional. That's how delusional they are. They don't understand what is happening. And Mike Pompeo, generally speaking, he never came across as a bright fellow between us, you know. Granted, of course, everybody watches us. So, yeah, I mean, how can he can do that? Does he understand what Russia is? No. None of them. I can tell you one thing. Get me the best CIA analyst, you know, about Russia today. They know nothing about modern Russia. They know nothing about Russia, period. And they wanted it. They loved to be praised. They loved this flattery that, you know, they were the best thing ever, who defeated Hitler, you know, and, you know, created this brand new world, you know. So, yeah. They're not very bright fellows. Some of them are, but most not. They are ignorant. That is why, you know, people are, oh, yeah, you're going to live in New York, really? In this crap hole? Dude, go visit Kazan or Moscow, St. Petersburg. It's just like, it's not even fair anymore, you know? And they still don't get it, you know?
Andrei, what's so amazing, when we look at the bigger picture of the world right now, and recently, before... today, earlier, I was talking with Ambassador Chas Freeman about what has great happened, man, with Hezbollah, yeah, and with the, yeah, with Nasrallah.
He old was a generation of American statesmen. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And he was talking about how they could kill Nasrallah together with all those commanders. It seems that they were talking with Hezbollah through the foreign minister of Lebanon and suggesting ceasefire, which was confirmed by the government in Iran. And they said the same thing to the government in Iran. They were talking with Hezbollah through the foreign minister of Lebanon. They were all together talking about ceasefire. They agreed on ceasefire. And when they learned that they agreed on ceasefire, they just attacked and they killed all of these, assassinated all these people. This is, Andrei, this is the same type of mindset. When you look at the conflict in Ukraine, you look at the 2015, they were trying to, Russia was trying to negotiate with them. But they, in their mind, in their background, they were thinking of building the Ukrainian army. They killed 14,000 Russian, ethnic Russian, in the eastern part of Ukraine. You see, at the end of the day, the policy, their strategy matters most for them. They don't care about the casualties, the people who are getting killed in this type of mindset, and how devastating this policy is for them at the end of the day. Because these countries are getting tired of these type of policy. You look at Russia and Iran, or they were forced to be with each other by the West. They have a lot in common with each other. And China as well. These are three countries that are totally forced by Washington in Taiwan, in Ukraine, in the Middle East. They are forced to be together. And how do you see the bigger picture, Andrei? And do you see any sort of mindset, any sort of gain for Washington coming through these type of policies that so far they didn't work? But it doesn't seem that they understand what's going on.
Let me put it this way. American elite producing machine has been broken for the last 30 years at least. It produces the essentially academic frauds. Most of those professors in all those Ivy League or in the humanities departments of Oxford, they are frauds. They operate not on facts. They do not operate based on knowledge. They don't even understand what knowledge is. They think that if you handle operation, you can basically, you know what, process it in any way you want. As I already stated, they do not understand what objective reality is. And they are, this is the sickness. It's a mental sickness, which is called exceptionalism. They talked themselves up to such egos larger than cathedral that they didn't recognize that they're not even up to the same scale. It's an order of magnitude more than what they in reality are. But they continue to, you know, talk themselves up, inventing. Listen, America's history of the 20th and 21st century is essentially confabulated, as it is for the West. Because there is this fundamental, critical point in history of humanity, which is the World War II. They understood what it is. They understood that essentially it was just postponed end of the combined West, when the United States took in all those Nazis, when the United States self-proclaimed hegemony and that they would defeated Hitler. So when you live in this delusion and you believe in it, and essentially you bought this delusion, what do you expect? They act as if their fantasies are, you know, reality. It's like you go to the Academy of West Point and you start to explain to them scale or, for example, operations on the Eastern Front. Everything else pales in the history, military history. And they cannot accept this fact because they're constantly told that, you know, General Patton was great general, that we defeated Hitler, you know, and things of this nature. They didn't. They came in to prevent Soviet Union to basically going to the shores of Normandy, you know, in the Low Countries. That's it. You know, it doesn't mean that many people, and there was no heroism. There certainly were heroic people, were brilliant, you know, strategists, Ike, Bradley. You know, these were people who understood what they were doing. And they were decent or great military leaders. But for the most part, geopolitics and the larger scheme of things, I mean, World War II was the end of the West. It killed it. They just, United States was just the institution, so to speak, or corporation, if you wish, which simply postponed their reckoning, you know, and the facing of the reality. Paradoxically, in some sense, the collapse of the Soviet Union played to Russia's advantage, you know, and they still didn't understand it. And when you look at this, and you look at this environment, you look at this cultural milieu, of course, there are, you know, people of the scale like Michael Brenner or Ambassador, you spoke about, or obviously Ambassador Chess Freeman, and Jack Matlock, and these are all generation of people, highly educated and highly, with a wide, scope of things. But if you look today, look at the basically product, like again, I said, Ben Wallace. He won't be allowed to command a platoon in Russian army. Yet the guy comes out with some, or Mike Pompeo, he's laughed at in SVR and in FSB. This is clown. This is the circus which tries to run the world. And as such, they live in this environment, which they, if you read my fourth book, the first chapter is entirely dedicated to echo chamber. They echo chamber themselves into complete corner, and they do not understand. They are not as big as they think they are. They are not as great. There are some things which are great. And for example, America's greatness comes not from military. America's greatness comes from completely different things of the, American industrial genius, and entrepreneurial genius, from the Bill of Rights and things of this nature, the idea, how the country was built up, and things like that. But since when U.S. Army was something super duper, it was the 12th army in the world on the eve of the World War II, with a pretty much very little military tradition of fighting large wars. Russians have been fighting wars for more than 1,000 years. Russian general staff is older than the United States as the state. But they still try to, and you have those people try to go out and say that we are greatest. You're not. You know, you're simply not. And now you have this dramatic cognitive dissonance. And as I already stated, on the level of society, on the societal level, that means on the level of the large masses of people with certain, you know, behavioral patterns, that creates a serious social issue. And institutional issue. We already saw what Pentagon's planning is. We saw how it works, quote unquote. I mean, normal people do not plan operations like this, you know. So there you go. And as a result, they lost it. And how they will recover? I don't think so. Europe will recover, but United States might recover. Still large nations with a lot of resources and things like that. But this generation of the American or Western political leaders and the so-called elite, utterly corrupt, utterly illiterate, and that's what it is. And as the result, as I already wrote today, can you imagine the Russians in Ministry of the Foreign Affairs, Minister of Defense, or SVR and FSB, they're shaking their heads in disbelief or looking at the actions of Washington and Brussels. It's just like, you don't do those things, you know, you're just killing yourself. But they continue to do it, you know, so what can I say? Nothing we can do about it.
Yeah. Macron, in his latest, one of his latest talks, he was talking about the priority of the United States is the United States, and the second priority is China. And when it comes to Ukraine, he wasn't sure that if the United States want to continue the same policy, if, in my mind, he was talking about Donald Trump, if Donald Trump wins. He wasn't sure about that. And on the other hand, they're talking about that the main threat to France is Russia, Andre. Mm-hmm. And here is the Prime Minister of Kosovo talking about Russia. And it's unbelievable the way that he's talking.
Grandparents were suffering from German and Italian fascism. But fascism is not reserved for Germany and Italy. It is a plague that can fall upon every state and people. Our generation is living in the time of Russian fascism. And we should fight with democracy, with sovereignty. We should fight with solidarity of all European nations and states.
As ridiculous as it seems, but it's so dangerous, Andre, this type of mindset and the way that they're spreading this type of mindset and then they're making the narratives. And it can get all of us killed at the end of the day. And they don't understand it. They're just portrayed. How we can understand these people, how they could get to the highest level of power in these countries.
Because that's the system. That's how the clockwork, so to speak, set up. That's the negative selection. You're getting the most vile, stupidest, unprincipled, and uneducated people. You get Alina Baerbock, this clown from Kosovo, and the only reason Kosovo existed is a bond steel military base of the U.S. Armed Forces. Which, by the way, is another funny thing, which tells you how incompetent Pentagon is. They think that the more bases you have, the more influence you have. The fact is, the more bases you have, the more fat, prestigious targets you have, as Iran demonstrated, for example. So, you cannot teach these people. And again, as I already stated, you go for 44, for example, if you are, let's say, economics major and you go to the 44-week training course to become officer in Sandhurst, what are you going to get? You're going to get the incompetent economist who is incompetent tactical level officer. That's the only thing you have, you know? And yeah, as a result, you have all those people, this whole form, so to speak, surfaced and it runs the things. Apart from the fact, of course, we have to keep in mind that United States foreign policy is practically controlled by Israel and AIPAC. And so, yeah, that's the result. You think everybody, everything was about smoke and mirrors and, you know, what this Wizard of Oz. Like I already stated, General Polikovsky, a couple of months ago, comes out. This whole bubble of the Israeli Defense Force have been burst. It's not even probably the second rate. They have some tanks. They will be burned. The only thing they have, which is they can operate, with the exception of Syria, with impunity, is to launch standoff weapons beyond the borders of the country. That's it. Let's cover this shit, you know. And so, yeah, that's what they're good at, you know. So other than that, we already saw, you know, even the Hezbollah, you know, as they think they decapitated, doesn't matter. New people will come in. And they will continue to fight. So it's like, yeah, they don't even understand what war is. And as I already stated, their framework, which is written by all those political scientists and generals from RAND who lost all their wars, who have this fake degrees in political science, who do not know real mathematics, who never graduated from the serious military academies, they go out and write all those papers, you know, but about how you have to learn and compare. You read those criteria of the, for example, estimation of the power balance. It is written by amateurs. They don't understand the basic things, you know. So and when you have the elites and so-called brains like this, America is the country of the think tanks, you know. They are sinecures, they are defrauding people who finance them, basically. So, yeah, you're not going to get anything good. So it's like this surgeon in Florida who months ago, I don't know how the guy got his, you know, medical diploma, and make no mistake, malpractice, medical malpractice happens everywhere, but they get the guy who needs to has to remove his spleen. He just felt uncomfortable, so they go in and remove his liver, and well, yeah, the guy dies obviously on the operating table. It's like, what the hell, man? What do they teach it? That's pretty much, you know. So they have literally the crew or surgeon, their nurses, and they evidently didn't have, even I mean, military engineer, essentially, you know. So even I know that there's a difference between spleen and liver. Didn't they have the anatomy class? So they basically removed the liver without which humans cannot live. And like, well, that's pretty much a Western military too. This is what we are experiencing today.
Andre, to wrap up this session, here is the article in the
Hill. Oh, yeah.
Why do Russians appear so satisfied despite the war in Ukraine? Why is that, Andre, in your opinion?
Well, first, it's written by the famous shyster and moron, who obviously immediately becomes the contributor to all kinds of things. He probably sells BS to all kinds of imbeciles from Council for Foreign Relations or Atlantic Council. He is actually declared a foreign agent in Russia, this Mr. Inozemtsov, because Russians never lived as well as they do today. Never in the history. It is massively powerful economy. It's not only developing on the through the military industrial complex. There are these secondary and tertiary effects which expand gigantically, they are a productive base. And so what can I say? Because Russians are patriotic, because Russians know war better than anybody in the world, and Russia has an outstanding record of the military victories. So no country in the world has that record of the military victories on the historical proportions. Be that, you know, beating the Teutonic Knights in 1242, or defeating Swedes, defeating Poles, defeating Napoleon, defeating Hitler, you know, defeating Japan, by the way. So if you look at this, yeah, show me, compare me. So, and they don't understand Russian character because they been sold all this garbage from dissidents who very smartly understood that those people, they read Alexis de Tocqueville that about American garrulous patriotism because they need to constantly be, you know, if provided with the flattery, and they pour this molasses into their ears, and the guys started to believe in everything was told about Russia, because they loved it, you know. We're so great. Look at this, you know, subhumans. They so And then now with this, as I already stated, you want get Congress for 48 hours and bring them to Moscow, St. Petersburg. Let them basically see what modern 21st century cities are, especially the cities with such culture that, or then bring them to Paris, how it stinks, rats, criminals everywhere. Or Baltimore, why not? Or New York, sure. And then they will compare, you know, if for some of those people, that will be a shocking experience. But then again, most of the Congress are illiterate people. They have the degrees in law at best, you know, and they never run anything in their life. And so there you go. And that's the negative selection. You don't have people of honor, integrity, because that's how the system is built.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Andrei, for being with us today. Great pleasure as always.
My pleasure. Anytime. Bye-bye. Okay.